Yeah, thank you very much, Neil. And I would say there's no question. If you live in Australia, you are lucky guy already. It's a given aspect. Most people would not realize it if they never lived in other countries. Let me say to first of all, thank you very much for CEDA to invite me. I have to say I never got such a kind of a response from being a guest speaker. Even in my golf club, people say, we didn't know that you do this. Can we come? And is that a possibility? And so I think, CEDA, thank you very much for inviting me. And thank you very much for Southeast Water to sponsoring it. I know in tennis or in other sports, you always thank the sponsors after you win the tournament. I have to go through the presentation first, but thank you very much, Southeast Water. Electrical energy is the main part of my presentation today, and it is part of energy in total. And the information about energy in Australia and on a worldwide scale are absolutely massive. The studies that have been done in Australia alone keeps the team and has kept my team quite busy for a while. The reason why we choose the name picture of the future is that in our company Siemens, we started approximately seven years ago. We started a project because we believe if we can't make technology understandable in the public domain, we're going to miss the boat, because in the end we are not doing it for someone, we're doing it for us. And the think tanks, our own R&D department, I will talk about it, leading universities in the world, think tanks, customers have worked with us together and keep working with us together to continue to work on the pictures of the future. And you might have seen the magazine, and if you are interested, we provide these magazines for free on a quarterly basis. My message today is three elements. One is, and you might not be surprised, that technology is a part of most of the solutions that we are looking at today, and the technology is there. There will be always future developments in terms of technology, but it's in your private life the same thing. If you always wait for the latest computer, for the next computer to come, you're never going to learn how to work on a computer. And I would say that is true for a lot of enterprises today, waiting for the next technology and waiting for the next technology, but they're missing the boat, because in every successful implementation, you have to have the processes and you have to have the people behind it. Sure, coming from Siemens, we always make you believe that our technology will make the trick. But the matter of fact is, if you don't get the processes in line, if you don't have the people behind it, the technology cannot do the work. My second part is that collaboration is very important, because this is not a finger-pointing exercise, or one has to find the solution and all of the others will benefit. And my third one part is the commitment. That if we believe that energy, as Neil mentioned, and I have no doubts about it, energy is important for all of us, then it's a commitment from each and everyone who is in this whole value chain. And that's what I want to talk to you about it. I found this quote here, and I really liked it because it has a lot to do with energy. When a big storm is approaching, some build walls, and some others built windmills. The windmills, I think when this sentence was said, looked a little bit different than the ones here on the picture, but it gives you a little bit an idea in terms of the mindset. So what could be the big storm that we see? Well, the big storm is what is so-called the economical crisis. But, you know, in every crisis there are winners and losers. And a lot of companies will come out of this crisis stronger than before. And if you look into the opportunities of the crisis that we are talking about here, and I can assure you, I have seen the last months, every time when I went to functions, I saw the challenges, and I saw bigger challenges. But I want to talk about today the opportunities. It's Australian dollars, 4 trillion. We were last night in my office and we were trying to figure out how many zeros we need for explaining 4 trillion of government funding towards the economical downturn. $4 trillion. Never happened in history. 4 trillion Australian dollars. It's assumed that 1.4 trillion of this money will be spent in infrastructure. And that's already a very warning signal for people that say, okay, we have to survive the crisis, because there will be very active parts, be it countries, be it communities, be it enterprises. And out of this 1.4 trillion, we assume at Siemens that 560 billion Australian dollars will be invested in so-called green technologies. So, I know we all grew up where money was short. Maybe in the last years it was relatively easily available. But if you see these numbers and you're not talking about opportunities, I think we're all missing the boat. Why Siemens? Why I'm staying here and talk about energy? Well, I would say we are one of the only company that is, if I look at the total value chain, has a major part in all aspects of energy, particularly electrical energy, from the generation to transmission and distribution to use of the energy in commercial buildings and in industrial, and last but not least, in the residential areas with our house appliances and with our Osram activities. What most people don't know, because you see us more as a electrical company, is that we are the biggest software organization in the world. And as you see here, having 17,500 software engineers alone and 32,000 people working in R&D, that gives you a little bit of an idea what the company is all about. And this is our lifeblood. This is what Siemens is made of, innovation. By the way, this was my advertising pitch, and I'm going to move on now. Let's see energy. When we talk about energy, primary energy consumption in Australia by sector, you see here on this slide. And there is no question about it that 47% of the total energy is used for electricity, for electricity generation. So if we say energy is equal to electrical energy, I think one of the reasons is here 47%. And what we see is that this percentage will increase. And you have followed the discussion about electrical cars and other applications. And I think electrical energy is, from my point of view, the most fascinating form of energy with a huge scope of applications. It has two major disadvantages. Disadvantage number one is it is on a large scale, unfortunately, not storageable, not yet. And the second one is by generating it, particularly when we use fossil fuel, we're producing CO2. That's, from our point of view, the main disadvantages of electrical energy. When we look into the CO2 challenge, then again, coming back to the challenge on the electrical side, 33% of the CO2 in Australia is generated, produced by electrical generation. And now comes my key messages. The number one is we should not blame the generators for saying, okay, you do this. Because in the end, the whole value chain lives from this production. So they're producing the power in the end for us, the users. Imagine all of this power that is more or less centralized, generated today, would be totally decentralized. So in every house, in every commercial building, we would have our small power plant. By the way, I'm a runner, and on weekends when I run at Bayside, I can smell all of the fireplaces that are firing up. And that gives me an idea that decentralization, total decentralization of power generation is not the issue and is not the solution. So when I mentioned at the beginning that technology, we have to look into the whole value chain and not only on the generation side, and that's where the collaboration kicks in, and all parts can and will contribute to a solution. When we talk about the value chain, we see the generation, as I mentioned it before, we see the transmission and distribution side, we see the commercial and industrial side, and last but not least, the residential side. Sure, I can give you now much more information on the technical side on each and every, but unfortunately I have only 20 minutes time. So let me go through each and every of the items. I will put more emphasis on the generation side, but I want to talk about the others as well. The current capacity that we have in Australia, it's 47,000 megawatts on capacity, be it in coal-fired power stations or be it in gas-fired power stations, and in any other sources. And you see it's 15 power stations above 1,000 megawatts and 124 lower 1,000 megawatts. How is the future technology in terms of power generation? There are a lot of improvements in terms of upgrading existing ones, and I'm going to show you later some examples. And of course, new power plants. The efficiency of power plants has dramatically improved. Give you an example, coal-fired power stations efficiency was 42%. That was the latest technology in 1992. Today we are approximately 47%. And please keep these percentages, not like you go to a retail shop and see 50% of everything. To improve 1% efficiency on a power plant is a huge, huge effort, and it's a great achievement. So from 42 to 47, in a relative short period of time. And we see in the future that coal-fired power stations will go up to over 50% efficiency. On a CO2 side, it means approximately 16% less CO2 than in the traditional way. There are other opportunities like renewable energies, and I will come to this later. Let's now go to the transmission lines. We have 57,000 kilometers on transition lines in Australia. Most of them are AC, and we are going to lose, by using these transmission lines, approximately 10% of the energy that is produced on the generator side. Today, for long distances, and we have some examples in Australia as well, we're using DC technology, and that means the losses are only 5%. So we reduce the losses in terms of transmission 50%. And when I look into the future, tremendous opportunities here again to overcome long, long distances. That might not the first place interesting for Australia, but what it does is we can really help to become a sustainable energy provider. Because I give you one example, the last blackout we had during the bushfires, I think has cost the industry approximately 100 million. We are not seeing these numbers normally. It's say, okay, bad luck. But if you run a production line and you unfortunately cannot run your production for, even if it's only for a couple of hours, you're going to lose a lot of money. So reliability is another effort here. And then go to the commercial and the residential side, where 40% of the energy is used. And you see the energy consumption in both on the commercial and industrial side and on the residential side, and here again, with new technologies, there are a lot of opportunities, like, for example, intelligent buildings, power management systems that in most areas we don't have. And energy consumption, new technology, means we're going to get rid of our traditional light bulbs and moving into efficiency lamps or into LEDs. On the industry side, And that's very close to Australia. When you see today plants that are built new, just we launched a new steel making plant in China, and this steel plant uses a new technology called Corex. And it's 30% less CO2 and an efficiency increase from an energy consumption point of view of over 50%. So if some people make us believe, we're going to wait for China or we're going to wait for India, let they do something, I'm telling you, out of the 1.4 billion, a trillion infrastructure in China today where Siemens is involved, they are building the newest power plants. They are building the newest manufacturing plants worth maybe 5% of the total cost reflects labor cost. So if we come out of this crisis, we're going to have competition as we have today. The question is, are we coming as Australia? Are we coming out of this crisis stronger than before? So let's have a look into the Australian current and future energy mix. You see 2009, that's approximately our mix. Coal, 74% is coal. You have seen these numbers, I think, before. 18% is oil and gas. 2% is wind. And then a little bit hydro. By the way, hydro is for me a fascinating story because I'm fascinated about Australian history. And when I heard the first time about the Snowy Hydro scheme, what I learned was, at the time when this government made the decision to put this in place, it was 1950. It was 5% of the GDP of Australia for one project. If you translate this into our terms today, we would deliver for one project 50 billion Australian dollars. And I'm quite sure it was criticized at the time when they started it. And by the way, they didn't have enough labor, so they invited a lot of people from Ireland and from Europe, wanted to come to Australia and build this hydro plant. So what we did now is we said, okay, and again, it's a theoretical model, but I want to open our mind as well, to say, what would happen if we would use only today's available, commercialized technology in all aspects of the value chain, in generation, transmission, distribution, residential, and commercial and industry. What would that mean in terms of our footprint? And you see, we have the same 250 terawatt hours as energy. By the way, that's not 100% true because most of the new technology will deliver more output than we are showing here. But leave that aside, the CO2 output would be 149 million tons. So you can say, with today's technology, you can solve some of or most of the problems, and you can reduce CO2 by 30% with today's technology. I know it's a theoretical model because no one is going to rip off every installed thing that we have today and put in the new ones. But I want to demonstrate that to wait and say, okay, the next technology will do something for us, maybe it's not the only way to do. Maybe it's better to get the bull by the horn today. If we then look into 2020, and again, we are looking into the projection of the government in Australia to saying, okay, our energy consumption will go up to 309 terawatt hours at 2020, we again use then the mix of the energy generation that they've given in terms of renewable energy and the other sources. And we came to the effect that, again, we have 149 million tons of CO2, but we are producing over 50 terawatt hours more than before. And that's another efficiency of over 20%. So in other words, the message here is to wait for the next technology is not the way to fix the problems. Now I'd like to give you some very brief examples. I can stay here forever. Mortlake Power Station, a gas-fired open cycle power peaking plant is built. 250,000 Victorian homes will get power from this peaking power plant. 50% less greenhouse gas emission than conventional coal-fired power stations today. Another one is Yabulu Power Plant in Townsville, an upgrade of a new set of rotating and static turbine blades So that's the first of this kind in the world, by the way, in Australia and done. Increased the output by 12.7 megawatts, equivalent to 2,300 powering homes for that increase in output, and increase in efficiency 1.49%. Another one, Loyang coal-fired power stations, upgrade of steam turbine output for 3 units. Yeah, total output increased by 195 megawatt. And you see, even on coal-fired power stations, on a day-to-day basis, we can upgrade and we can optimize it. I talked about Baselink. Baselink is still the longest undersea cable in the world, where we connect Tasmania with Victoria, a fascinating opportunity, by the way, heavily criticized. I was already in Australia before the decision was made. All of the criticism about the Baselink things are gone, because I would say Victoria and the rest of Australia has benefit, so has Tasmania. And this, by the way, is a DC power link with only 5% losses for the power supply. Let's talk about alternatives, renewable energy. I lived for a while in the U.S., and I remember everyone in the U.S. said America is a God-blessed country. I think they should not forget Australia, because we have it all when it comes to energy. And maybe that's one of our problems. We have coal, we have oil, we have gas, we have uranium, we have thermal, we have hydro, we have wind, we have sun. And not to a level like everyone has sun. No, we have sun to a level where, with the technology that we see today, we really can use it in a commercial way. And that's what I want to show you. I thought, and it was fascinating when I heard this story the first time in Germany, back in our R&D guys did a presentation, and they said, on a square of 330 kilometers, for example, in the Sahara Desert, the electricity, that's an electricity demand for the whole world for 1 year. 330 kilometers by 330 for the whole world. I thought, yeah, fantastic. Wind, we used the same comparison, and I said on a square of 76 kilometers of land, we can produce with wind, we can produce annual electricity for all of Australia. And coming back to solar, with the technology that we're using, it's concentrated solar power. The storage opportunity are here at least now for 7.5 hours. That doesn't sound a lot for you, but if you want to use it in a commercial way, that means you can deliver power even if the sun is not shining. So this is our view in terms of renewables. Now you say, but that's a long way to go. Let me show you something. This was an announcement when my wife said to me a week ago, she said, by the way, there's a report on the internet that Siemens is involved in a 400 billion euro project in Europe. I said, darling, not 400 billion, must be less. It was 400 billion euros. The insurer Munich Rück, together with Siemens and together with major power suppliers, want to build a project where they use concentrated solar power and wind power. And the idea is that this power will be generated in North of Africa, as you can see here on this picture. And it should be not only help to produce the power for North Africa, where a huge environmental impact is today, that people are cutting the latest trees to get heating and get eating. So produce the power for that area, and at the same time be good for 15% of the total power production in Europe. Now, Europe is not different from Australia. A lot of people immediately, when such an idea comes, have tons of ideas why this is nonsense and cannot work. One said, okay, this is nonsense because these countries are not safe. The answer they got was, but Europe lives today from gas that they become from Russia. And the pipelines are going through a lot of countries that are at least as exposed like the countries in Africa. Now, some other people would say, from a financial point of view, it doesn't make sense. I don't know if we have any representatives of insurance companies here. Maybe they have some insight why Munich Re, one of the biggest, if not the biggest, insurer in the world, why they are interested in it. Now, what's happened with the money? We believe that by 2015, that power plants, at least this is Europe, with concentrated solar power, there's a break even with the wholesale price with traditional thermodynamic or direct steam and the solar power, concentrated solar power. So we achieve in 2015 parity. So on this basis, it is possible and it makes sense. Now you say, what would that mean in Australia? The same company that did this drawing for Europe did this one here for Australia. And can you imagine, can you dream for a moment that we have in the middle of Australia huge concentrated solar power plants? Maybe not 300 kilometers by 300 kilometers, maybe 100 kilometers by 100 kilometers. And we are providing energy not only for Australia, but for some of Asia. And we do it via high voltage DC links with tremendous less losses, and the other way around. If we short on power, we get power here, so we get a power grid that is much larger than maybe Victoria, New South Wales. We're connecting, no question about Western Australia. We're connecting, it's not shown here, someone is from New Zealand, maybe connecting New Zealand as well. They forgot this one, must be from Australia. So the point is here, the possibilities are there. And we all together, we have lived in Australia and in the world through a fantastic economical situation where business was fantastic, everything was growing, superannuation, our salaries, it was growing, growing, growing. And all of a sudden, we dump into the crisis. And the question for me is, when do we as an enterprise, when do we as a community, when do we as a country, when do we start to think in bigger pictures, in pictures of the future? If we didn't have the money to go after these projects when the money was there, now we borrow the money, 1.4 trillion Australian dollars, when do we start with this kind of thinking? Coming back to home and what can be done in the other parts of the value chain, I only want to give you very few overviews about the Penrith City Council energy performance contract completed in 2008, 35% in energy cost savings, CO2 reduction by 7,000 tons, similar by taking 1,600 cars off the street. By the way, when you use always taking cars off the street, we did this, and in Australia, by 2020, we have minus 15 million cars on the street, so I don't know how this works. Give you some other very brief examples in terms of house appliances. House appliances is a big thing. In Europe, they said, okay, 44 billion kilowatt hours of energy would be saved if 188 million appliances over 10 years old, yeah, would be replaced with the latest one, not the next generation, the existing generation, and that's good for 10 million homes energy providing. Or I talked already about the light bulbs. If we move all of the existing old light bulbs into electric saving lamps, it's an equivalent of half of China's energy demand. We're talking about industry applications. Worldwide, 20 million industrial motors consume 65% of the industrial energy. For me, 63%. And you know what the problem is? The motors, if the motors are Siemens motors, they run forever. I got phone calls from customers that are mad at me because I cannot demonstrate that we have some drawings of motors that we installed 45 years ago. The problem is that most of these motors are, from a dimensional point of view, over-dimensioned. And they're running maybe of 10, 15, or 20% of their capacity. But from an energy efficiency point of view, it's absolutely a nonsense. So we have to replace, and we should replace, these old motors. And by the way, you're not replacing only the motors. If you do this, comes back to my remarks that I made at the beginning. If you go through a process, in all of the projects that I have seen so far, you improve your efficiency anyway. And at the same time, you help the environment and you help your CO2 footprints. So let me come to the end of my remarks. We talked about the opportunities, we talked about the storm, we talked about the opportunities we have. I think we have all of the natural resources at home. And if I have a wish as someone who lives and loves the country Australia, I would like that Australia becomes an early adopter of new technology and to commercialize it. I've seen a lot of startup companies, very interesting, a lot of startup companies in Australia, bright ideas in all kinds of technology. And sometimes they got even funding, R&D funding. But when it comes to move it into business, they go to Europe or they go to the United States. So technology, ladies and gentlemen, technology is an enabler for a better world. I'm convinced about this. And for a better Australia. But it needs as well the processes in place and it needs the people that really want to strive for something new and bigger and better. Finger pointing that always the other ones should do something before I start is not what I call the collaboration that's necessary. The commitment that even small steps into the right direction, helping tremendously, is my third message. And we should really try and take everyone with us if we can. But the people that are always looking for the negative side of anything what is said, we should leave them behind and we should move on. The challenge is there, but I think the opportunity as well. And I hope that I've shown you what we can do today and tomorrow for an even better Australia. Thank you very much.